Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about America's newest religion. Now, we don't have an article today because you all know what's on the news, so I don't need to give you an article to introduce today's material. And frankly, I need every second I can spare to get through what we have today. So let's just go ahead and start about this new religion. A few decades ago, a group of scholars began working together on new theories of how race interacted with outcomes. Basically, what impact does being white or black have on where you begin and where you end in life? Nothing controversial about this. Seems like standard sociology or demography or economics. Good questions. Now, to answer this question, they employed a brand new, shiny, out-of-the-box theory called critical race theory. Now, if you don't follow academic arguments, don't worry. A lot of people have never even heard of critical race theory, though it has had an enormous impact on your life. So the question is, what is critical race theory, and why does it matter? Well, critical race theory is the epistemological theory that has five basic key components. These five tenets are these, and these are generally accepted tenets taken from the paper written by Tara Yoso, Octavio Villalpando, Dolores Delgado Bernal, and Daniel G. Solarzano. One, the intercentricity of race and racism. Critical race theory starts from the premise that race and racism are pervasive and permanent. Two, the challenge to dominant ideology. A critical race theory in education challenges the traditional claims of the educational system, such as objectivity, meritocracy, colorblindness, race neutrality, and equal opportunity. Critical race theorists argue that these traditional claims act as a camouflage for the self-interest, power, and privilege of dominant groups in U.S. society. Three, the commitment to social justice. A critical race theory in education challenges us to envision social justice as the struggle to eliminate racism and other forms of subordination while empowering groups that have been subordinated. CRT seeks to advance such a social justice agenda. Four, the centrality of experiential knowledge. Critical race theory recognizes that the experiential knowledge of people of color is legitimate, appropriate, and critical to understanding, analyzing, and teaching about racial subordination in the field of education. Five, the interdisciplinary perspective. Critical race theory draws from the strengths of multiple disciplines, epistemologies, and research approaches. A critical race theory in education challenges traditional mainstream analyses by analyzing racism and other forms of subordination in education in historical and interdisciplinary terms. The paper continues. Critical race theory frames what we do, why we do it, and how we do it. What do? We focus our work on addressing the forms of racism and their intersections with other forms of subordination. Why do we do it? The purpose of our work is to challenge the status quo and push forward the goal of social justice. How do we do it? We work by listening, reading about, and centering the experiences of people of color. Okay, so these all sound innocuous at first. They sound nice. Let's listen to people. Let's listen to other people. Hooray, listening is good and it's nice. And this sounds nice and innocuous, and there's no reasonable person who could disagree, right? But they're not innocuous. And they most certainly are not a path towards a reasoned understanding of the world and how it works. Let's look very carefully at some of the things that are said. Let's first re-examine the very first line. Critical race theory starts from the premise that race and racism are pervasive and permanent. Race and racism are pervasive and permanent. Not only is racism pervasive, and by pervasive, we mean the common understanding of everyone is a racist, or at least all white people, depending on whether we define racism in the old way or the new way. Not only is racism pervasive, it is permanent. So racism is permanent, and you're a racist. Now, maybe you don't, if you're white, that is. And now maybe you don't feel like a racist. Maybe you're white and you say, but I have black friends and black family members, and I love them, and I care about them. Too bad, sucka. You're implicitly biased. Implicitly biased. You're a racist, and you just don't know it. Not only do you not know it, but you can't even access it through introspection. Now, maybe you say, that's ridiculous, and you try to show evidence, you know, like facts that demonstrate that you're not a racist. Too bad, sucka. Critical race theory doesn't care about your facts. Why? Because of point four. Remember point four? It's such an important point, point four. Let's listen to point four again. Critical race theory recognizes that the experiential knowledge of people of color is legitimate, appropriate, and critical to understanding, analyzing, and teaching about racial subordination in the field of education. Experiential knowledge is legitimate. Okay, well, that sounds innocuous, right? I mean, we all experience what we experience. But what happens when a person of color's experiential knowledge confronts objective truth, or statistical knowledge, or any kind of datum which would contradict his or her experiential knowledge? Well, the person of color's experiential knowledge is legitimate, so all other claimants to truth need to get in line and conform to the person of color's experience. Now, you might be saying right now, Luke, that's ridiculous. People don't really believe that. That's so preposterous that thinking people, academics, people dedicated to the life of the mind, don't believe this. Yes. Yes, they do. Standpoint epistemology, a theory that began in Marxist and later feminist thinking, has now been incorporated into arguments for critical race theory. The concept is, essentially, a form of extreme postmodernism where a person of color's lived experience cannot be externally invalidated, and most certainly never invalidated by a white person, because a white person cannot understand the person of color's experience. However, this street doesn't go both ways. You see, I, as a white man, and a quite handsome white man, if I do say so myself, I cannot understand the lived experiences of my wife, because she's a woman, or of one of my best friends, Mike, because he's black. And as far as that goes, it seems like, maybe, kinda, almost. You might be thinking, well, it depends on what you mean by understand their experience. I mean, we're all human, but we're all unique, except that there are two major problems. One, I can't understand my wife or my friend Mike, but they can understand me because the dominant culture is white and male. So my wife and Mike can understand my lived experience, but I can't understand theirs because of my implicit bias and white privilege. They blind me. In a very literal sense, they blind me from understanding their perspective. Now, on top of this, being a complete overstatement of lived experience, it ignores our common humanity. I don't know what it's like to be a woman, but I know what it's like to be a human, and I've never been black, but I can empathize with black people through our shared humanity. But you see, it's not enough. I, as a white man, I cannot share in the lived experience, and therefore I cannot criticize it. So let's recap. One, all white people are racist, and permanently so because of, at a minimum, implicit bias. Two, white people cannot find this implicit bias in themselves through introspection. We just have to believe it's there. Three, any attempt to disagree that these things exist is foolish because persons of color's lived experience have said that systemic racism and implicit bias are real, and white people cannot invalidate a person of color's lived experience. That brings us to, of course, to the fact that a lot of white people are going to say, well, that's stupid. I'm not a racist. I've never done a racism in my life. And I won't be bullied into believing that I have some unconscious and inaccessible implicit bias that makes me a racist. Well, that's just more proof that you are a racist, friendo, because of something called white fragility. White fragility says this, and I'm quoting directly from the woman who coined the term, Robin DiAngelo. White fragility is a state in which even a minimum amount of racial stress becomes intolerable, triggering a range of defense moves. These moves include the outward display of emotions such as anger, fear, and guilt, and behaviors such as argumentation, silence, or leaving the stress-inducing situation. These behaviors, in turn, function to reinstate white racial equilibrium. So let's rephrase that. White people are racist and also hate being called racist, and when you try to prove to them that they are racist, they deny it, which is further proof of their racism. Which, by the way, is a lot like asserting that someone's a pathological liar. You say, hey, you're a pathological liar, and they say, no, I'm not. And you say, well, that's exactly what a pathological liar would say, isn't it? And you see, it's a circle that can't be broken. There's no way off the merry-go-round of race-based slander. Well, of course, all this sounds bad, but you're saying, Luke, I mean, come on, this all seems rather ridiculous, but why do I need to worry about this? Well, because it's coming to a church near you. And this is not just garbage social science that's making its way into theology. You see, the paper on critical race theory I read earlier has a call to action, which states that white people need to do stuff, and I quote, how do we do it? We work by listening to, reading about, and centering the experiences of people of color. And you're saying, well, what on earth does that mean? Well, in our popular culture, it means becoming anti-racist. Remember, and this is crucial to remember, all white people are implicitly biased and are complicit in systemically racist systems that exploit people of color. The solution is to do social justice. Well, what does that mean? Well, scholars Helen Pluckrose and James Lindsay explain the core tenets of anti-racism. Racism exists today in both traditional and modern forms. Racism is an institutionalized, multi-layered, multi-level system that distributes unequal power and resources between white people and people of color as socially identified and disproportionately benefits whites. All members of society are socialized to participate in the system of racism, albeit in varied social locations. All white people benefit from racism regardless of intentions. No one chose to be socialized into racism, so no one is bad, but no one is neutral. To not act against racism is to support racism. Racism must be continually identified, analyzed, and challenged. No one has ever done. The question is not did racism take place, but rather how did racism manifest in that situation? The racial status quo is comfortable for whites, for most whites, therefore anything that maintains white comfort is suspect. The racially oppressed have more intimate insight via experiential knowledge into the system of race than do their racial oppressors. However, white professors will be seen as having more legitimacy, thus positionally more intentionally engaged. Resistance is a predictable reaction to anti-racist education and must be explicitly and strategically addressed. So let's look at the highlights. All white people benefit from racist systems, and all white people are complicit in the system. Racism is a part of everything. Resistance must be addressed, and you're never done. You're never done. Now, how do you fix it? Well, if you're white, what are you supposed to do? Well, you have to do anti-racist work. Well, what does it look like? Well, it means changing the definition of the word racist. It means admitting that you're a racist. It means pointing out racism as defined in the new way, not the old way, whenever you see it. It means continuing to confront your racism. It means looking for other forms of white dominance or patriarchy or heterosexualarchy, basically all the archies. Lastly, it means championing anti-racist ideas and policies. Now, this is a summary of the views of Ibram X. Kendi, who is now very much in the zeitgeist. Now, if you're not disturbed yet, let me clarify why this is so terrifying. This is a religion. Critical race theory and anti-racism is a religion. It offers a comprehensive explanation of why the world is the way it is. Racism. And to a lesser degree, patriarchy and all the other archies. Because white people are the oppressors. White people are oppressors. And this is a comprehensive explanation. It explains everything. And if you disagree, your disagreement is further proof that you're a racist. And people who are on the anti-racist bandwagon have a moral obligation to call you a racist. And if you finally give in and you say, okay, I admit it, I'm a racist, harumph, harumph. And I love you, big brother, and 2 and 2 make 5. Oh, never mind, different story. When you finally give in and say, I'm a racist, now the true legalism can begin. Now you have to spend the rest of your life pointing out racist systems, racist people, explaining why all roads lead to racism. You must become an evangelist for anti-racism. And whenever you have doubts, perhaps sometimes you might feel like, you know, I'm not sure I ever was a racist, and I certainly am not one now. Well, if you ever get to thinking that nonsense, you get a big dose of white fragility shoved in your face. And the very fact that you're comfortable is more proof that racism is ingrained in you and you need more self-flagellation. I mean, you need to have more struggle sessions. I mean, repeat the creed. I mean, you need to do more anti-racism. You need to keep telling yourself over and over and over how racist you are so you never forget. And you always have to confront others and tell them how bad and racist they are. Friends, this is the most despicable form of legalism I've ever seen. And it can only be accepted by faith. And there's no way to disprove it. Because any attempt to disprove it is more evidence of how deeply ingrained and enmeshed racism is in society, even within people of color, by the way. Friends, this is a substitute religion. It undermines the Christian message because instead of explaining the problems of the world through human sin, human depravity, and yes, sinful systems that exist in the world, the explanation of all problems is not total depravity centered on the original sin of Adam and Eve, but all of the world's evils are centered in white racism and heterosexual patriarchy. All the problems stem from white oppression, white male oppression. Now, this cannot be proven with evidence or logic, but must be accepted and sustained on faith. All corroborating evidence simply reproves the hypothesis, and all counterfactuals are dismissed as racist and/or products of systemic racism. But the worst and the biggest problem is that it replaces Christ in his finished work to bring reconciliation between God and men, and man and man, with some loathsome, legalistic, self-loathing, and responsibility-shirking pseudoscience. Christ is no longer the answer. Christ is no longer the answer in this system. In this system, the answer is to just believe the system more and more deeply, and more and more fervently proselytize the system. You need to keep digging in deeper and deeper and deeper, and you're never done. The self-loathing never ends. The self-flagellation never ends. The struggle sessions never end. You have to keep going until you die. Christ is not the answer. The answer instead is the snarling, slandering, rioting, looting, doxing, canceling Pharisaism of the woke. No man can serve two masters. We cannot serve both God and anti-racism. And we certainly oughtn't to try. I hope and pray we won't. But I do hope you'll join us again next week for another exciting episode of Truth in Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.